Welcome to the MSP Law Podcast, where we share legal tips and strategies that help managed service providers and technology firms build a better defense. I'm your host, Tom Favinsky.
There is a growing trend to having the terms and conditions of your services, your master services agreement, be made by reference to a website where you take these terms and conditions and you put them on the website, and then anything you do with the client, you say they're subject to the terms and conditions on this website at this web address. No matter what the situation is, in any contract, you have to show that the parties to the contract agreed to the terms and conditions. So no matter what system is employed, in order for there to be an enforceable agreement, the parties, both parties, have to consent to the terms and conditions. It has to be mutual. It can't be one-sided in order to be enforceable. This still holds true for electronic or computerized contracts. The body of law that has enabled for electronic signature is wonderful, and you still have to show that there's an offer and that there's an acceptance and that there's an assent to these terms, a mutuality here. There's been a body of law that's been revolving around services offered through websites and apps where the services are accepted by something other than an electronic signature. And these cases can be instructive for us to understand where the courts are going and how likely are they to enforce an MSA that is referenced to a website. For these cases, the courts considered whether a user acted and behaved in a way that indicated that they had accepted the terms and conditions because of the users of these websites and apps. They frequently don't get a copy of the contractual terms in a hard copy format. Again, these cases are instructive as to whether or not we can enforce the MSAs by reference. And there are different types of cases. We have the browse wrap contracts. These are where the users agree to the terms simply by using the website or the app or by clicking on a URL that discloses the relevant terms real briefly. Accepting these terms and conditions normally doesn't involve any clicking or taking any other action. That's a browse wrap. In the sign-in wrap type contract, the website or app, it has a text notice informing the users that they have to accept certain conditions before using the site or the service, and the user is not required to read these conditions or express their agreement by checking in a box of any kind. Instead, the notice of the terms is displayed, and it's close to some other button like a sign-in or registration, and the user goes through that sign-in registration whenever they want to proceed. In the click wrap environment, this is right before you can use our website or app or completing anything, you have to click a box stating that you agree to the terms and conditions in order to proceed, and that is the supposed approval of the applicable terms. Then there's a scroll wrap. In the scroll wrap, the users have to physically scroll to the bottom of a complete set of terms and conditions, and then there's a checkbox at the bottom that says, I agree, or something similar to that, and they have to check that box in order to move forward to use the website or the app. So let's take a look at browse wrap contracts. I read cases regarding this, and because users are frequently unaware that the contractual terms were made available, let alone that their continued use of the website or the app would be considered acceptance of those terms, courts were generally hesitant to enforce these browse wrap agreements. Even close proximity of the hyperlink terms to buttons that the users have to click on without more was found really to be insufficient, that the user had constructive notice of these terms where the website owner or app owner makes its terms of use available through like some sort of conspicuous hyperlink on every page, but does not otherwise provide notice to the user that the terms or the prompt or some sort of prompt that the user has to take some sort of affirmative action to demonstrate assent. So generally say no to browse wrap style contracts. And so when we're really looking at the MSA, the simple reference to the MSA terms and conditions is probably most similar to a browse wrap type of contract, because nobody, you don't have to click through or sign up for anything in these types of proposals where there's a reference to the MSA. So I am generally against that. And then we'll go through a couple of the other style contracts. But the other part is, like, should you even do it? Why would you do it? So next up is the sign and wrap contract. And this is where the website or the app has this text notice that informs the users that they have to accept these conditions before they can use the site. And they're not required to, like, click a box or anything. The courts struggled with the sign and wrap contracts. The process of establishing whether these things were held to be enforceable really created quite an exhaustive evidentiary review. There was seemingly some analysis of how the sign-in occurred and whether it was displayed prominently and how close it was to the registration button or the sign-in button. Courts seemingly took into account two kind of broad categories to determine whether or not the contract was enforceable. Does the website or app give the user or the customer reasonable notice of the terms to which they'll be bound? And number two, is the user required to take some sort of action that unmistakably manifests their acceptance of those terms? So it really turned on how those terms were communicated to the user and whether or not the user's acceptance of those terms was done in a way that made it obvious that the user was accepting the contract. So if we did this with MSAs and we said, okay, we're going to have them have to sign in through a portal or something where it's referencing the MSA, then we really have a facts and circumstances setting for a judge to look at. You know, did we give them reasonable notice that they're going to be bound by these terms? And did they make some sort of unmistakable manifestation that they agreed to these terms? So that is something that a finder of fact, a jury, or the judge in a bench trial, that's what they determine. And do we really win if we go through the district court process and we prevail, or go through the appeals process and we prevail? I don't know that that's a victory, because there's a lot of legal fees and time and delay before you get there. In this type of setting, the courts are going to be looking at, like, the text size and the text color and where the location of the reference to the general terms and conditions are, and was the hyperlink obvious or conspicuous, or was it cluttered? All of these are considerations for a judge to look at to determine whether or not the notification was obvious to the user. And it's an exhaustive look that is very expensive. Then we're looking at the second issue. Did they obviously consent to it? Not just was it conspicuous, but did they obviously consent to it? So does it have something that says, I agree, or I register subject to these terms? I agree seems to be the best way to do it if you're going to roll the dice and go this method. But the user's acceptance has to be proven, that they understood that by their actions or their conduct that they were consenting to it, that it wasn't just snuck through. When I look at this sign-in wrap styled MSA terms and conditions incorporation into the relationship, to me it just doesn't seem worth it. It's just, you get that huge expense in proving both of those factors, and I don't think you gain that much by having the reference as opposed to an electronic signature. So next up, scroll wrap and click wrap agreements. So scroll wrap agreements are frequently found to be enforceable due to the nature of how they're exhibited. The user has to scroll through the terms and conditions and then take some sort of action at the bottom to indicate their acceptance of these terms and conditions, and it's just really unmistakable proof that the user had at least observed these terms and conditions, and it can be tied back in reference to the actual person, so you can ensure that that was the person that did it. In spite of their successes, the usage of these types of agreements really decreased, because there's this negative connotation associated with scrolling through as it relates to the user experience. So the scroll wrap is probably the best, but most likely to be upheld. But people really have turned, or companies have really turned, to the click wrap agreements, because it doesn't require that whole carrying through all of the terms and conditions in order to proceed. In the click wrap, the user of the website or the app is checking a box, and the box says that you're agreeing to these contractual terms, and courts typically have regarded those agreements as enforceable because the user is really informed that they're entering into a contract by virtue of requiring them to acknowledge that acceptance. So if it's used properly, a click-wrap agreement works, and there's a good chance that those terms and conditions would be upheld. When you're dealing with an MSA, what you're really doing is, and doing these click-wrap or reference type things, what you're really doing is you're saying, I'm going to take a transaction that is typically, in the past, has been on paper between two parties, and I'm going to move it into this world where things are being referenced. And so there's a lot of places for the courts to hide. They can just say they didn't think that the customer had actual or constructive notice of the terms. Even if they're easily accessible, they can make that decision, and your choice is to appeal it, and that's expensive. Even if it's clearly referenced in documents and invoices or project communications, you know, you do all that stuff because it's more likely to be enforced then, but a judge can still say, I don't think so. And then the way on which the terms are presented on the website matters. If they're hidden, if they're difficult to find, if they're presented in a way that's clear and conspicuous in the relationship, probably will be enforceable, more likely to be enforceable. If they're not, then it's more likely to be unenforceable. Obviously, if there's an electronically signed document that clearly references the MSA terms and conditions on this website are being incorporated, and that's going to strengthen your position, but you still have to demonstrate that the terms and conditions that on the date that they signed were as you're presenting them to the court. And all the customer has to say is, well, those weren't the ones that I signed. And the judge is going to look at you and say, well, you're in this business. You're the technology expert. Prove to me that they actually went and looked at it. Prove to me that you haven't changed these terms and conditions. You know, because if the terms on the website can be changed unilaterally without notice, courts are going to be less likely to enforce those, especially if the changes are substantive. If they affect the rights of the parties, you still got to show mutuality in those changes. You know, courts can just say, I think it's unreasonable or unconscionable or violates public policy or the law, and they can just say, I'm not going to enforce it then. If your electronic documents, whether it's an amendment or otherwise, has an integration clause or that says something like this is the entire agreement, it can affect your interpretation as well. So maybe the better way of addressing this is let's bring the MSA into play when there isn't money exchanging hands or significant money exchanging hand. Let's do it when we're actually going to go in and do an assessment for them for low cost or no cost, and we're giving them something, including confidentiality. Let's talk to them at that time. Like, we don't want to invest in you unless you're going to agree to these terms and conditions in advance. And you know what? You probably ought not go into a prospect's environment without having protection on liability in case you miss something in your review or assessment. Let's say there's a virus that was there and you didn't discover it, and it's pre-proposal and something happens, they could come back to you and say, well, you should have told me about this. And now you have unlimited liability. Interesting that you would have unlimited liability with a non-client while you're limiting your liability with existing clients. So maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should go in there and say, no, we're not going to come into your environment in this cybersecurity world and expose ourselves without having the protection of a written contract. Since the courts are holding you accountable for providing sufficient notice of the contractual conditions that you're providing services in order for you to have an enforceable contract and demonstrate that the customer manifested consent, why not just do it the old-fashioned way with a signed contract? And that's my conclusion. I advise against doing the reference or the scroll wrap or the browse wrap or any of that stuff. And I would just say, get your contract signed at a time where they are more likely to sign up to your general terms and conditions when no money is changing hand, while you're still going to come in and do your gap analysis and tell them what you think they ought to do. And do it electronically. Electronic is great. They don't have to sign it with ink. We can do the electronic version. And just avoid the whole incorporation by reference piece so you don't have all the costs associated with proving that a contract exists.
Well, that's it for this episode. This is Tom Popinski. I'm an attorney with Virtus Law. My team is called the MSP Law Team. We serve MSPs, and we'd like to chat with you. Feel free to reach out to us by email. My contact information is Tom, T-O-M, at Virtus Law, D like Victor, I-R-T like Tom, U-S, like United States, L-A-W.com.